Good morning, everyone. It's Paul D'Souza and Warren Gereau here again from Sightline Wealth Management, and it is Thursday, April 9th. Warren, I'm looking at the U.S. and Canadian job numbers here. So Canada has 1 million individuals unemployed. The unemployment rate went from 5.6% to 7.8%. In the U.S., 6.6 million jobs were lost, and that's 16, almost 17 million in the last month, and unemployment rate is now closer to 10%. And the markets are all up probably all week now, actually. There was a low day on Wednesday, closed out a low. Because I'm scratching my head, and does this make sense to you?
Not really, Paul. If you look at it from a pure fundamental point of view, we really haven't had the bad economic news that everybody is suggesting that we're going to have as a result of the economic shutdown. I would expect the unemployment rolls to continue to increase, at least for a bit longer, until the shutdown is removed. But that's not going to happen overnight. That's going to happen piecemeal, as Trudeau came out this morning and said that he expects it to be, I think, sometime in June, but that when we sort of reopened the economy, that it would happen sort of a rollout, on a rollout basis. So from a fundamental point of view, we haven't had all the bad news, both from an economic point of view and earnings point of view and on equity. So you would think that the market might be responding to what we anticipate over the next, 3 to 6 months or next quarter, next 2 quarters. But the market is ignoring that. And the possibility could be that we've had an enormous amount of bad news. As you know, we've talked in the past, we've had this steep, terrible correction from a high to a low, one of the steepest corrections we've ever seen in the history of the markets. And now we're having this rebound, and we've had some, little bit of good news in the sense that even the Fed chief came out and said that he's forecasting a robust recovery once the coronavirus pandemic is under control. And we're seeing in some of the data from the hospitals and so forth, like I think the Mayor Blasio came out yesterday and said that he thinks that they won't need any more new ventilators, that the infection rate may have slowed in New York, which is the epicenter in the U.S. And we're seeing sort of anecdotal evidence as well in European countries that maybe, just maybe, this thing is under control a little bit. And maybe, I think the markets are looking at that and they're seeing a positive note there. And they're saying, okay. The other thing too, Paul, I was thinking, when you look at some of the dividend yields out there right now that are supposedly available, and we expect dividend yields to be cut or dividends to be cut, and you compare that to what we're seeing in 10-year treasuries and shorter-term treasuries, where you can't even make 1%, and in some cases you're making, a few basis points, maybe people are looking at these yields and saying, even if the yield, say, on the Royal Bank, which I think is trading somewhere around 5% yield, even falls to 3%, it's still significantly better than they could get in the interest rate with bonds. And maybe they're suggesting, let's take a run at this. And we know we could see a further decline, but these yields are too attractive for us to pass up. And once again, low interest rate policy, as we've seen in Europe, as we've seen elsewhere, forces people into more risky assets, and i.e. equities. And certainly they were substantially lower than they were, 6 weeks ago. So, well, that could be some of it. I don't know. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, gosh, you said so much. I don't know where to begin. Okay, let's go. Well, let's start with what you last said. So there's nowhere else to go, so you invest in equities. Yeah, that's the acronym of TINA, T-I-N-A. There is no alternative. And so with yields extremely low and negative real rates, investors are forced into equities. And I've maintained all along that these low rates are a war against savers. They're a war against investors, or they're forced into riskier assets in order to search some type of yield. I'm not saying banks are risky assets. I mean, there are equities with dividends, but I'm saying they're actually forced into the markets. And so I think it is levitating. And just as you're talking, so that's point one. Point two is thinking the volumes have been lower than normal. And perhaps everyone, I mean, our advice here is to average into the markets, you know, potentially put a quarter, a third, maybe a fifth of your money at, and we've said that maybe three weeks ago, we've said that. And perhaps the money coming to the market on these low volumes is just investors averaging in. Now, looking at the data today, I think we're officially into a new bull market, which is 20% rise from the bottom. And I mean, it's quite surprising, again, low volume and that high. However, just have a feeling this could be just a giant head fake. And the news on the way down was quite grim in terms of, as you said, a really, really extremely fast sell-off on terrible news about a worldwide pandemic. However, what is the great news causing the 20% rise in such a short time? It just doesn't equate to me.
No, I don't think it does. As I said, it doesn't equate on the fundamental basis. So, you know, I'm very skeptical, as you are, on this rise. And as you said, technically speaking, if you look at what a bull market, you know, the percentage change, so call it a bull market, we certainly had that. And but as you say, so volumes are low. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So how about this question? Was this a medical crisis or an economic crisis?
Well, in my way of thinking, it was simply a medical crisis that was transferred into economic crisis, and certainly has manifested itself as an economic crisis now. Mm-hmm. And I think there's lots of evidence out there to suggest that, you know, certainly we need to get a handle on these pandemics or potential pandemics, and we need to do a better job of preparing for them. Because this one seems to have caught an awful lot of people off guard, even though many people had predicted this pandemic. But certainly we were not prepared by any stretch of the imagination for at least this pandemic. But right. I'd like to mention another point you just made about saving and savers and zero interest rates and the impact that has on savers. One thing that we haven't mentioned,
right?
A war against them. We haven't mentioned the impact this is going to have on pensions and on the unfunded liability of defined benefit pension plans, which, of course, all government employees and state and federal, local, all are subject to or are all part of defined benefit pension programs, generally speaking, as well as a lot of union plans have defined benefit pensions as well. We think that, you know, or I think, especially given the current environment, the rate environment that we have with zero interest rates, it's really going to have an extremely negative effect on the funding ratios. And the funding ratios were in really bad shape coming into this, and now they're even going to be worse. There had been some improvement as a result of the equity market over the last year or so. But now, you know, we've had an awful lot of that reverse. And of course now, if you look at asset allocation, typically is 60-40 with 40% in fixed income and 60% in equities. That 40% is going to be earning, if you look at the coupon rate, is going to be earning 1-2%. And when most discount rates, the pensions are in the, you know, 5-6% range, that's going to put quite a strain on equities. So, you know, we haven't really talked about that, and that's going to have a tremendous impact on the, finances of state and local governments and so forth. And I guess we can extend that into the debt crisis. So what are your thoughts on that? Or have you even been thinking about that? Has that come up in any of your conversations?
It has, but I haven't. I know your background is definitely dealing with pensions as a pension consultant. So I haven't delved in as much as you have. But as you're talking about that, I was also thinking about, maybe it's related, is, look, we've been in a credit bubble. Interest rates have been so low. There's a lot of borrowing binge occurring. And now with this medical crisis turned into economic crisis, and with the impairing the ability for individuals and companies to pay loans, and I know there's a deferment and things going on like that and programs. However, we haven't seen any insolvencies, any bankruptcies, any collapses of companies that as we did in 2008 in terms of, I think, the mortgage company back in March of 2008, Century, I believe, one of the smaller mortgage companies. So we haven't seen anything like that, which is just, again, surprising to me. And look, I'm not hoping for a lower lows. I'm just being pragmatic here and just looking at everything and wondering, it just doesn't seem right to me. So, your thoughts then on the credit bubble and
what may be different from the last market pullbacks we've had is that this one was so sudden. It happened in a matter of, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. In previous market corrections, it's taking a number of months. Like we mentioned, I think, on a previous call that in the Depression back in the 1929 and 30s, that it took 83 months to get to the low, right? I think it was 83 months, something like that. Anyway, here it happened in a matter of weeks. It was so sudden. And maybe we're ahead of ourselves in the sense that, you know, it hasn't happened yet because it hasn't had time to digest. I think those things that you just talked about are coming. I think you're going to see defaults. The credit crisis, I think, is upon us. It's just going to take us, you know, a few more weeks or a few more months or maybe a quarter or two before we actually see the results of that.
So here's the data. Here's the data just to refresh, and maybe we'll put this on the site. So in 29, the crash duration was 2,000 days. And the recovery took 24 years. In 1973-74, the duration of the crash was 700 days and took 7 years to recover. 1987, 61 days. Recovery was 2 years. Dot-com, 944 days. Recovery was 7 years. Credit crisis of 2007-2008, 485 days, and recovery was 7 years. So again, I just point to what I hope we are, that this is the worst of it. However, hope's not a viable investment strategy. So far we're at, let's see here, going on all, will be 60 days on February. It's not even yet. Where are we at now? Probably, what was my math? 35 days. And yeah, we're calling this a recovery. Again, just being pragmatic here.
No, the only thing I'd point out is different, and I'm not supporting the opposite view, is that interest rates and all those previous market pullbacks or corrections were significantly higher than they are today. And I think that's putting a little distortion in. It will put a distortion, I believe, in our recovery. It may accelerate it, but I think it's premature right now. Suggest.
Well, on that point, interest rates were higher, and then they could lower interest rates as a monetary or economic policy tool. Now,
exactly.
Where do you go? What do you do now? So as we discussed, that bullet, the chamber is empty, maybe go negative. And you know what the next bullet is? Let's just drop money out of helicopters. So that was a $2 trillion aid package. There are talks of another $2 trillion aid package. This is what's left. Just throw money at this.
What's interesting is even the Fed came up this morning and announced a new loan package program for small businesses. So you're right. And one thing that we haven't learned that was really interesting from the European example, is low interest rates or zero interest rates or negative interest rates doesn't necessarily stimulate spending. What it does seem to do, as we've noticed in the past, or at least if you use Europe as an example, is it increases hoarding. Is that all of a sudden, instead of going out and spending money because of all the uncertainty, you know, people put their money under a mattress or put their money in the stock market, or they do something different with it than go out and spend it on goods and services that would actually stimulate the economy. So that's another thought.
The velocity.
That,
velocity.
Well, the velocity of money goes dead, right?
Yeah.
It's zero.
And with good reason. I don't, you know, if we don't know what our economic future looks like, you just spend it on necessities.
Right. And now, you know, things could be worse. I mean, we've spoken about this before, Paul, and this time around, because the economic activity has virtually come to a standstill and people don't have revenue coming in. Now, yes, there are programs that the government are putting in programs in place, unemployment enhancements and so forth to help people bridge the gap. But there's also, loan deferments, mortgage deferments, et cetera, et cetera. People are going to have to pay that money back. It's not like a free ride here. And it's going to take a while for when people start back to work to take care of their debts and so forth and so on. And that's going to create additional, I believe, uncertainty that when they do break free of their, you know, this period of time and paid it back what they owe for this period of time, they may be a little more cautious and put money in the bank. They may be increase their savings rate a little bit. Again, that's hoarding cash. So yeah, there's so many permutations here at this point in time. We just don't know what we don't know. And I think one thing we can be certain about is that we'll be surprised that the behavior because it's not, you know, as we've said, on a historic basis, we anticipate certain things to happen and they don't seem to be happening the way we think they should be, or at least on a time frame. So maybe our timing is off. You know, we need to have, because this thing has been so rapid, now we've had this rapid increase, it's going to take time to digest. And as the numbers come out, we'll see a different story in a week or 2 weeks or a month, a quarter.
What about this analogy? So I'm thinking about when you are prescribed or when you have antibiotics, when you have a virus or a virus, simple thing, and then you have 10 days prescribed antibiotics. And so after about 5 days, I actually start feeling better. But what is the recommendation? Finish the dosage, correct? And so it's almost as if like the market's feeling better now. However, it's not quite that. You got to finish this dose. It's almost the same analogy too, back to the quarantine, where people feel like, and this is where I think China's having a second wave of COVID-19 cases, is they felt, okay, the storm is cleared, let's venture back out. And now they're getting, again, a resurgence of cases. So I think this is why now I'm seeing Prime Minister Trudeau calling for, did he say a few months?
I think he said June.
Yeah, so shocking. However, not so shocking, because he wants to prevent that second wave occurring. We're going to do this. Let's do it right. Let's take our lumps. Let's take the pain. Let's take the full 10 days of antibiotics here.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting,
maybe,
Paul.
Maybe that's happened. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that's interesting. You know, we get a prescription for the antibiotics. In a sense, you can look at what the administration has done in the U.S. and most governments have done with their stimulus packages, their fiscal stimulus packages and loan packages. You know, they've just handed us the prescription. In most cases, people are now applying for these loans. That money really hasn't made it into the market yet. We haven't really felt that impact. Now, we're obviously, the stock market is anticipating and maybe, you know, better things, but you know, we've got the prescription in our hand and now we're going to the pharmacy to try to fill the prescription. And that's what's going on, I think, with the loan packages to help small businesses. They don't have the money in their hands yet. They're actually going to the authorities or whoever they have to go through to actually get their loan advance to help meet their payrolls and so forth. So, yeah, I think that's a good analogy, but we need to take the full prescription and it's going to take time, maybe a quarter, 2 quarters to digest everything.
Well, this is good. Let's continue with that. So is the market actually expecting that once the checks are in individuals' hands that they're going to go and spend it and put it into the market? I hardly think so. It's just to keep them afloat. And even with the amounts, it's not even going to be keeping them afloat. It's just barely covering their losses. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly the U.S. program seems that way with their, you know, $1,200 and $500 per child. The Canadian situation, I think, is a little better. I think they're promising like $2,000 or something, which, you know, for people who are on the lower end of the economic scale, people who are hourly workers, that $2,000 can go a long ways. But again, I think to your point, what does it do? It buys necessities. It doesn't buy, you know, they're not going out and buying cars and houses and toys and so forth and so on. They're spending it on necessities, which, of course, makes all the sense in the world. They have to.
Can we continue with this medical analogy? Here's another one. So what's happening with the trillions now in aid packages? I think I've read this years ago. It's referred to as Botox economics. So for those who want to remove fine lines and wrinkles, take a shot of Botox. I don't know how long it lasts. I'll call it a few months. And then what? The wrinkles reappear. So we get a shot of Botox of $2 trillion. And what was that, 2 weeks ago? They're talking about another $2 trillion. So those effects were felt in the market. Here's another injection. of $2 trillion of Botox into the markets. It's covering up all the cracks and the fine lines and all the wrinkles of the market, covering it up. However, it doesn't make it go away. It's a surface procedure, right? So it's a thin veneer beneath it. Still some issues. Thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, we mentioned it, I think, on our last call, the unintended consequences of this is going to lead us to the possibility of a debt crisis and government debt crisis, sovereign debt crisis, because, you know, before they had enormous liabilities and responsibilities that they were having difficulty even paying. And now what they've done is just added on enormous levels of debt. So, you know, I think that's an unintended consequence of trying to restart, you know, the economy. And again, if, as you say, this Botox, if we don't have some sort of magical, you know, after they have an initial Botox treatment, if somehow they don't, you know, magically get young again and the wrinkles disappear permanently, it may take additional stimulus packages to keep it going. And that is just not going to do well as far as the overall economic condition of government, which again leads to higher taxation and so forth and so on, which of course is not a stimulant to the economy. So, yeah, it's really hard to know.
All right. I think we've beaten this to a pulp here. So now how about some good news? So you've definitely read about, or people have read about, the drug that's used to cure malaria, or to treat malaria, I should say, hydroxychloroquine. And so it's interesting because President Trump has requested a lot of this being imported. Is it Faust has said, you know, it's not proven yet, it's anecdotal evidence. However, from what I read, there's several physicians in New York City who have 100% success rate so far. So that's not anecdotal. And these are not, you know, out there physicians. These are physicians in hospitals who've acquired this drug and are using it with the patients. And I know you were reading something earlier that had something like 6,000 doctors or cases were treated already.
Yeah, there's a healthcare data collection company by the name of Sermo, S-E-R-M-O, I guess that's
right.
That's how you spell it. Anyway, it's a global social platform used for physicians. And what they decided to do was take their capability, this connection, this social connection, and they wanted to find out from doctors around the world what, you know, what kind of treatment patterns they were following. And there was this was a study that was done just recently, just like April the 2nd is when the results came out. They had 6,200 multi-country physicians surveyed and covering over 30 countries. And they mentioned this treatment was the most effective treatment. They said it was the most overall chosen as the most effective therapy among COVID-19 treaters from a list of 15 options. So in as much as he was highly criticized initially, you know, I don't, you know, Trump isn't my biggest fan, and certainly he isn't a doctor and he isn't a scientist. So someone put this in his ear early on that this was a potential cure. And of course he goes out there and puts it all over, you know, the news media. It seems that based on, if you use this study as an indication, not absolute, but a strong indication, it looks like it was successful. That leads me to believe that, okay, if this treatment is that successful, and it's not like one or two countries, this is 30 countries, 6,200 physicians are saying this, then do we need a vaccine? Is this a treatment that actually works? I think more work certainly needs to be done on this. There's no question at all. We need to deeper dive into this. But I think this is a light at the end of the tunnel that is not as dire as we thought it was. Yeah. And even Faust came out this past, I think it was either today or yesterday. And, you know, if you remember originally, he put the panic and the fear of God in everybody. And he said millions of people are going to die. Right. He's now suggesting that only about 60,000 will die from this. Right. So,
well, perhaps that's the reason. Yeah.
Well, I think this is all good news. And, you know, it's anecdotal. We haven't really seen the curve flatten yet. It looks like it's maybe peaking. But I would suspect in the next couple of weeks that if we don't see a rollover, the problem is much more serious than we think. But at this point in time, it looks like it's slowing. And based on this study, and I'm sure there's going to be many, many more after this. And we need to get ready for the next time this does occur. Let's face it, Paul. Mm-hmm. We were not prepared for this. We need to have better treatment centers, better facilities, better supplies, because it will certainly happen again. It may not be COVID-19. It will be COVID-25 or something. You know what I mean? It'd be some other something else will get us.
Right.
So, yeah. But I think this is good news. I think this is very positive.
Just now, as we conclude. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say that, you know, all this stuff is having an impact on the market, Paul, and it's influencing how investors view the future, and is impacting fund flows, in my view, anyway. Sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
You know, just thinking, maybe wrapping up here, CARP is a Canadian Association for Retired Persons in Canada, and they put a petition to the government to suspend the minimum risk withdrawals in Canada. And I thought, thinking about this earlier, or actually last week, and I thought, this is not going to be good for individuals who, you know, forced to withdraw. I mean, for those that don't need to, you know, you don't want to be withdrawing at when your investments are low. So I thought this is a great petition, and I hope it actually catches wind, and the government truly looks at this as an option for retirees, that they do not have to withdraw the minimum payment from the RIF. So to be continued on that. On a lighter note, you know, a lot of advice has been to, you know, for individuals staying home, take care of yourselves, exercise, eat healthy. And just want to caution too, is that physiotherapists, chiropractors, massage therapists, they're not working. And so just be careful, watch your lower back, watch your knees, maybe take, I don't know, go not probably 30% less than what exertion that you typically would do. Just maybe safety first, because I know, you know, I've had personally issues with my back when I've kind of gone a little bit too aggressive. And I can't imagine not being able to see my osteopath or my acupuncturist if that were to ever happen. So I know I'm being careful. So for those listening, be careful. And secondly, dentists love popcorn. Popcorn's great for business. And so that's one of the most common occurrences with you bite on a kernel and you crack a tooth and you're in a dentist. So I know you're laughing, but just it's these things I'm thinking about here as I'm like, how else can we help individuals other than what's happening with their investments? But take care of your teeth, take care of your back. Anything else, Warren?
No, not at all. I just, again, I'm a big proponent of being outside and getting some exercise. And I think it's critically important to get a lot of vitamin D, get some sunshine. But obviously you have to be careful and not be around too many people. In your own backyard is maybe as far as you might want to venture. But stay healthy.
Right. Okay. Very good. All right. Excellent talking with you again. We'll chat next week. And have a great day, everyone.
All right. All the best. Now. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.